Hi everybody, welcome to the special Beef and Lamb New Zealand podcast. It's the 2nd of August 2016. I'm Aaron Meikle, Senior Extension Manager here at Beef and Lamb New Zealand. And joining me today is James Parsons, Beef and Lamb New Zealand's Farmer Director for the Northern North Island, and he's also our Chairman. Each year, Beef and Lamb New Zealand undertakes some farmer consultation rounds. The farmer directors get out, meet farmers, talk about a few things. That's a statutory requirement for us under the Commodities Levies Act, but it's also a great chance for farmers to meet with their farmers and specifically talk about some governance issues. I've been with the company a wee while now and with some of its predecessors, and consultation rounds, certainly in years between referenda, are not always the most riveting topic. That's why you see our directors out and about at most of our events as well, a chance to catch up with farmers over a cuppa or around the barbecue. But this year, however, there are two major items for discussion, and they've certainly been some pretty hot topics. There's a new approach to market development, which is consistently seen as one of the key areas for levy investment, and a review of Beef and Lamb New Zealand's constitution, which certainly came up during last year's referendum. Because they're each such significant items in their own right, we're adding some multimedia approaches this year to the meetings and the mailouts, and you're listening to one of them now on this podcast. So welcome to the call, James. I think you have been in the role a wee while, as you said, and most people will have a fair idea who you are, but maybe just a bit of background, where you farm, what you farm, and what's going on.
Thanks, Aaron. So farming currently up in near Dargaville, so 1,200-acre sheep and beef hill country property, and it's we're quite keen sheep farmers, so about 50% sheep, which is a reasonably high ratio for Northland, and 50% beef. So that's the operation there. It's a farm with my wife and in a family business.
Cool. All right, so we'll get straight into it. And the first major item for consultation, and I think it's obviously one dear to pretty much all sheep and beef farmers' hearts, is market development. And there's a new approach coming to investing levies in market development, and I quote, that will take us from market maintenance in traditional markets to targeting new segments in both new and traditional markets. So, end quote, what's that all about in a nutshell?
Yeah, so last year we started a review of our market development activities, and we really wanted to ask the question, is there firstly a role for Beef and Lamb New Zealand in market development? And then the second question was, if there is, you know, what does that look like? And so it was we were very open-minded. If the review came back saying we should exit, we would have been having a discussion with farmers about how we felt we should redirect resources. Interestingly, the review came back saying actually there is a role, but it's very different to the way we've been doing it currently. And if you look at a lot of our market development activities historically, it has been more market maintenance. We call the program market development, but to be fair, it's been a bit more like trying to maintain, you know, to use a farmer analogy, maintain your fertility levels on farm. It's not been capital sort of fertilizer type expenditure. And so in the market space, it's been sort of often directed at more our traditional markets. The review came back really clearly after extensive interviews with processor exporters, farmers, even those more at the consumer coalface, saying that we needed to focus more on true market development. So developing those new opportunities in new markets, or it may be in an existing market, but it's something quite different to what we've been doing.
So achieving a premium, growing the industry have all sort of been things hopefully that have always been a part of market development, but one of the new ones you mentioned there is creating new market opportunities. Do you want to talk a bit more about that and just what actually the plan is?
Yeah, so probably the easiest way to describe it, Aaron, is we've really broken things down into four program areas. And the first one is what we call market intelligence. So this is about looking, you know, scanning the globe, having a market intelligence unit that are looking at what are the opportunities that are out there, and also probably what are the threats that are coming our way, what's happening globally in terms of, you know, supply increases or constraints with our competitors, and consumer perceptions and opportunities. So that's the market intelligence unit. And then the second program we're proposing is around our story. So if you think about that a lot of our promotional work historically has been very much more around the functional attributes of the beef or lamb that we produce, it hasn't really got into the story that underpins it. And this was overwhelming feedback from people right through the supply chain saying, you know what, New Zealand has got this amazing story, New Zealand sheep and beef farmers, yet we're not telling it. And we've focused more on those functional attributes, as I said before. So if you think about the values of farmers, the care, the attention, the detail that we put into the way we produce our products, family values, even right down to the way we look after our staff. You know, we're a first world country. We're actually right up there in terms of food producers, the way we look after our staff, animal welfare, environmental stewardship, all of those things. And we do it from this kind of this motivation of actually that's the right thing to do. And yet we take that for granted here in New Zealand. We haven't told that story well at all. Mm-hmm. And so it's really about building this story that captures a lot of those values, that philosophy, production philosophy, and sharing that with our customers, particularly consumers around the globe. So that's the second project. So work out where we should be focusing our efforts with market intelligence. Second project is around building our story, red meat sector story. And we've got real interest from government around that. Mm-hmm. Then the third project area is then saying, right, based on with that intelligence and plus that story, let's go and work out, develop some new markets, mm-hmm. new segments. And that would be probably getting away from our traditional markets or the traditional cuts that we're selling into those more mature markets and going into markets where there is not, where we haven't got a footprint, where there's very little New Zealand product sold, and really developing those markets up. And so that's kind of quite long horizons. We call that horizon 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that we would then leave those more traditional markets where the majority of our product is traded currently more to the exporters. And this is the feedback they've given us, that they would look after the market maintenance type activities. Then the fourth program area is crisis and issues management. And that's really probably more reactive. Mm-hmm. If something came up like a food safety issue or some animal welfare issue or something like that, then we would swing into gear really quickly in a reactive way. And that was identified as a real role for Beef and Lamb New Zealand as an industry good organisation.
Okay. So just made a couple of notes while you get running through those four key areas. And this is all outlined in the pamphlet that's been just mailed out to farmers?
That's right. Yep. Yes, that should be with farmers now.
So there's some more detail there as well. But first one, you talked about our story and moving more to, I guess, sort of values-based type stuff away from functional. Where does the grass-fed message fit in there? Is that a functional attribute or is that a key part of our story? I know yesterday we just heard from Nick Beebe about the growth in the grass-fed market per se. Is that something will be a big part, or is it something New Zealand's not got to itself?
I think it absolutely is. You know, my take on this, Aaron, is that the grass-fed, it's absolutely core to what we do. Mm-hmm. It is a point of difference, but it's almost behind that is the why we do grass-fed. Mm-hmm. And so that's when you start getting into the values and the production philosophy that we have. And so when you put those together, because we've absolutely been telling the story or promoting our products as grass-fed, particularly if you go to North Asia, that's very central to what we do. But again, it's been more around it's grass-fed, therefore it's healthier for you. Mm-hmm. Whereas, and that's not saying that we would get away from saying that, but it's actually almost coming back to the why, that production philosophy, why we do it. And so that's the subtle difference. So we'll still be able to tell the story around some of those more functional attributes, but the big idea is how do we build that emotional connection with our consumers? And that's something that you won't build when you are just sort of telling story about the functional attributes. When you get when people really understand your motivation, or consumers understand your motivation and as farmers, where we're really coming from, then you can kind of get that. That's much more romantic. And it sounds all warm and fuzzy, I know, but we're not just kind of flying blind here. This is something that the wine industry and the kiwifruit industry have done really well.
So that actually is my next question. Is this something, the things you're talking about there aren't unique to red meat production? Is this seen as part of a larger whole with horticulture, wine and those sorts of industries, or is it something that's red meat will stand alone on?
No, I think we're too small to just go it alone. Mm-hmm. And so there's definitely some sectors more ahead than others. But there is quite a move afoot around developing the primary sector story. And so that's one where there would be a red meat story. There would also be one around dairy. Obviously, we've talked about wine and kiwi fruit, forestry, etc. Primary sector, really getting their act together in a coordinated fashion. So we're really pushing our bit. And the exciting bit, Aaron, is we've gone through this process, the review, It's been fantastic in terms of the collaboration mm-hmm. that we've had with the processing export sector. We haven't always found it that easy to build these joint initiatives, but this time round, and I think, to be fair, looking back in hindsight, we've approached it in a much different way from beef and lamb perspective, and it's been very much around strategy rather than structure and just dollars.
Okay.
And so that's kind of that. The processors and exporters have been really on board with us. So it's been a good journey with great government involvement and interaction as well.
So you've talked about the clarity now around the role of beef and lamb and where we sit in this and where we don't, because obviously we don't sell a single kilo of lamb or beef. And I just want to tie that in. Before the last referendum, there was a proposal I know we were involved in developing that didn't go ahead.
Mm.
What's different this time, and where is the agreed role of Beef and Lamb New Zealand versus where maybe you saw it before the referendum?
Yeah, so the review process we went through, we were very open-minded. As I said at the start, you know, we were actually quite comfortable if the review came back with a recommendation we should exit market development. But it's not, you know, that's not what we received. In fact, overwhelmingly, the answer was no, Beef and Lamb needs to be there. But as I alluded to earlier, the role is quite different. And so it's more, as we went through workshops and things like that, the view from farmers and the processing and export sector was actually there's some things that none of them can do on their own, and that's where Beef and Lamb New Zealand needs to be the natural sort of conduit or industry leader to pull this stuff together. And so that's really the role for Beef and Lamb New Zealand. So I rattled through some of those areas earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's around how do we provide that leadership role
mm-hmm.
that individual companies struggle to do on their own because they're trying to deal with their competitors. So I think the important point to make though, Aaron, is none of this is about going and doing the work for companies.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is this all underpins what they do, and so the individual companies, and some of them definitely are doing a lot of promotional work themselves, then leapfrog off the strong base of the New Zealand red meat sector mm-hmm. story, which they in turn can really start promoting their individual products.
So specifically you're talking, you know, the key role for Beef and Lamb is in the new or emerging type markets, so
that's right,
and leaving the established ones or as they become established to the... How's that going to work? I mean, is that something we'll still be working hand in hand with processors, or is that something that Beef and Lamb New Zealand has the ability to do by...
Yeah, so probably what I should just clarify though is that it may well be being an established market mm-hmm. but actually a new product
within
or... For example, UK for lamb is quite big, but what if we really got into promoting, you know, in conjunction with the exporters,
mm-hmm.
they said, hey, we really need to do something around hogget.
Mm-hmm.
And most farmers know actually the hogget's sometimes the best eating, but we get a mutton price for it basically when we send it to the works.
Yeah.
So what are the opportunities there? And so that might be a new market segment. So it's sort of horizon 3 and 4 opportunity in an established market. So. But coming back to your question, let's say we identified a new market in Asia
mm-hmm.
or it might be in Eastern Europe, and there's no product that much that we sell into that market as a sector. We through our market intelligence unit, we might sort of identify that. We would then go to the various meat companies and say, here's an opportunity. Who would be interested to partner with us? And we would go into that market in a sort of a joint venture type approach and build that, create some value, and we'll be starting from a zero base and over time, you know, a reasonable time horizon, sort of 5, 6, 7 years, we would then build that up to it becoming more an established mature market, which at that point the Beef and Lamb New Zealand would look to exit, and the companies would crack on and go it alone. So that's kind of, and then we would be looking for the next opportunity. And the idea is that we would have several of these on the go at any given mm-hmm. time. So it's very much, that's around that new markets, new segments type program that I talked about earlier. And so that's around how we do some value creation.
So you've talked to, got the proposal, and that'll be landing in people's mailboxes soon if it hasn't already. I just want to, before we move on to the next one, just go over again the process, how you've got to this point. So there was a review. What's been the farmer involvement to date in pulling this together? You've talked, you know, about the processors' views and they're keen on it.
A really important point. So we've, in that initial review, we kicked this off about September last year. We we did a lot of workshops with farmer focus groups. I think it was the most important for a start, and said, what do you folks want out of our out of what we do? So this wasn't sort of a big mass consultation across the country. We found more increasingly, Aaron, that actually farmer focus groups, you get into some, you can really unpack the issues and have quite a degree of comfort that when a small group of farmers are informed, they can give you some really good feedback. In fact, that's a pretty, we deliberately stack these groups with some real, some cynics yep. around market development as well. And so that gave us some real comfort that actually the strong view of farmers is, yeah, we should be in this space, but different, as I said, to the way we've been operating. So we did quite a few focus groups up and down the country in that regard. Then we started doing some focus groups with processor exporters. And then we actually did quite a few interviews with people more in the marketplace, mm-hmm. as in our customers. So I say customers rather than consumers. So they might be food service chains or retail chains, etc., and find out what their views are. So it's quite right, be it chefs as well, right through the supply chain. And then we also talked to government and what are their thoughts, various sort of ministries.
So just on that, actually interesting, I've seen a couple of them. There's some videos that will be linked to in the consultation material on our website, interviews with those people you're talking about.
Yeah, that's right.
And from burger chains to high-end restaurants,
yep.
you name it.
That's right, yeah. So Elevation Burger, even McDonald's, really interesting to get their views. Mm. Big purchases of New Zealand beef.
So, been through that process, talked to processors, farmer groups. What's the process now? Do you need formal farmer approval, or what are you seeking with the consultation round now?
So, no, we don't need formal farmer approval, but I guess the culture at Beef and Lamb New Zealand, the way we roll is that we're very strong on ensuring that farmers are with us in this. This is a farmer organisation, and mm-hmm. so farmers are pretty smart people, and so through that consultation phase, you actually pick up some insights that, or things that we need to work on. So that's it's always a valuable exercise. But no, formally we don't need approval for farmers. Mm-hmm. And to date, I've talked to quite a few groups. I think there's a view that, yeah, this sounds about right, you know, get on with it. In fact, it's almost an impatience, really, yep. and saying, look, we're tired of hearing about what you're gonna do, let's just hurry up and do
get
it.
Get on, do
so,
it.
So that's cool, and that's what we're pretty keen to do. We also, this does affect our staff as well. Mm-hmm. We've got some staff within the market development team. So we're running this is still a proposal. It's not finalised yet. So we're running a consultation period with staff as well, because we're talking about some fairly radical changes.
Yep. And I know you'll have been asked this, and you're going to get asked it again. What's it going to cost? Are we going to have to pay more, or?
Yeah, so the proposal actually, currently about $5.5 million, mm-hmm. we've been investing in market development. And so in this first year, just because it's a setup year and we won't have all our ducks lined up, if we do go forward with the proposal, we would bring that back down to just over $4 million mm-hmm. in the first year and then ramp it up. So the short answer to the question is no, it won't cost farmers anymore.
Are processors putting in more money? That's the other, was part of the proposal last year.
That's right. And in a way, Aaron, that's probably where it came unstuck. It became a big discussion about funding mm-hmm. and who pays as opposed to strategy. Yep. And, you know, at the time we were disappointed, but now kind of looking back in hindsight, we can understand why we probably got derailed. So processors would be putting in funds more around that, you know, the four project areas, program areas, the one around new markets, new segments, mm-hmm. which is, you know, going into new markets and building something, that would be where they would put in the extra cash.
Yep.
And that would be on a sort of a joint venture type arrangement. What I think there is an expectation, however, if we start moving out of the more market maintenance activities, they will have to pick up mm-hmm. the tab there. And that's not something we would be policing, that's being yep. appropriate, but there's an expectation if Beef and Lamb is going to shift its resources more into those Horizon 3 and 4 opportunities, that the Horizon 1 and 2 or those mature existing markets is something that the processors will need to carry their weight in.
Yep. Thanks, James. We will move on to the second section now. It's just an interesting observation. We're currently in Wellington. It's the Beef and Lamb New Zealand Farmer Council AGM. Nick Beebe, General Manager of the market area for Beef and Lamb New Zealand, spoke to them yesterday. I think generally got positive feedback, but he made a really interesting comment. He felt Looking back now, what happened before the last referendum may have been a blessing in disguise. It's actually really refocused people, and we've ended up in a better place. So now it's a chance for the farmers out there to have a look and have their say. So, right, the other major issue, obviously, and this one's been bouncing around for a wee while, is around the Beef and Lamb New Zealand Constitution. During last year's referendum, I know this came up, and Beef and Lamb New Zealand committed to undertake a review of it. I've been reading the farming media, so I understand this is all just about kicking out the meat industry appointees. Is that right, James?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we can look at it through two lenses. I think it's there has been wide range of views around whether we should have meat industry nominated directors on the board of Beef and Lamb New Zealand. So if I just sort of back up for a second, Aaron, mm-hmm. I guess that if you think about the genesis of the Beef and Lamb New Zealand Constitution, it was established in 2003, voted in by farmers under the old producer board and meat board, producer board reforms, where the wool board and the meat board were essentially, the wool board disestablished and the mm-hmm. meat board shrunk down significantly. And so Meat and Wool New Zealand was created, which is now Beef and Lamb New Zealand, to pick up the farmer-facing activities of the wool board and the meat board. And there's a lot of references in there to things, you know, like establishing the board, you know, how did you get the sort of establishment board up and running? This is all in the Constitution. The you know, references to wool, which we mm-hmm. no longer mm-hmm. collect levies and invest on behalf of farmers in the wool area, and then goats as well, which we don't operate in. So it's quite a lot of outdated references. Mm-hmm. And so those things are probably more technical in nature and just need an update. But then the more material area, and this is one, as you alluded to earlier, is around the governance structure of Beef and Lamb New Zealand. And there's certainly been a view from quite a few farmers that this is a farmer organisation, it's their mm-hmm. organisation, and they don't feel it's appropriate to have meat company directors or chairs sitting on the Beef and Lamb New Zealand board. So just to give you a quick snapshot, and for those listening there, The current governance structure of Beef and Lamb New Zealand is we have the capacity to have a board of nine. That's made up of six farmer directors that are all elected from the six farmer electorates or wards, three in North Island, three South Island. Then we have provision for two meat industry nominated directors. So the Meat Industry Association, which represents all the processor exporters, nominates two individuals, and that's a three-year term, just like the farmer directors, onto the board of Beef and Lamb New Zealand. And then, importantly, that they're nominated, mm-hmm. They're not appointed. So it's absolutely the discretion of the farmer directors whether they receive those nominations or say, actually, we would like to have someone else. We don't think that person is appropriate. And then we have provision for a ninth director, which is currently unfilled, which is an independent. So it'd be someone more on a skills-based basis, we'd say, actually, we're lacking the certain skills around the board table, we'd bring in this ninth person as an independent.
Okay. So what's the what are the options, or what are the proposals? What are you taking out to farmers?
Yeah, so I guess that we've taken the view that this, we could get in a consultant and, you know, do this massive big review of our constitution. We've taken the view that actually we understand the issues reasonably well. It's more what the farmers want. This is a farmer organisation. So really the sort of the options we're putting to farmers is saying, do you prefer the status quo? Mm-hmm. If farmers at large don't like the idea of having meat industry nominated directors on the board, then what would be, you know, then there's some options. We could shrink the board down to seven, for argument's sake, and say, right, we'll just retain the independent director slot and just have six farmer directors. Or do we replace the two meat industry nominated directors with two independents? So we'd mm-hmm. have a board of six plus three independents. So again, a board of nine. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, probably realistically, I'd suggest probably the six plus three option or three independents would be the more realistic one of, or stick with the status quo. And so, yeah, that's where we're up to, really, and we're asking farmers that question. And I guess when you unpack it, and that we've sent in the mail out that farmers mm-hmm. receiving, there's a good table there which lays out the pros and cons of mm-hmm. each option. And so it's well worth a read. It's sort of, in plain speak, just laying out sort of, you know, if we went with option one, this is what it looks like, option two, option three.
So on the market side of things, we haven't got option 1, 2, or 3. You've said this is the plan we like to propose. With the constitutional review, do the board have a preference?
Yeah, so the board have, we've had a good look at this, and we feel actually the current structure works really well. So this is a unanimous view of the farm directors, noting obviously that the industry directors would have a vested interest. I'd probably make the point though, Aaron, that the industry directors, it's they come on the board, and I think there's quite a good healthy rotation that they like to have there. But they're very passionate about farmers' interests, and they are they're not representative of the meat industry. Mm-hmm. They are there as directors in the best interests of beef and lamb New Zealand farmers. And so, I don't want to labour the point around that, but we actually think that they deliver really good value. So we think the current model works quite well, certainly not broken. And I guess it's probably a case of, if we decide to go away from having the industry nominated directors, and that's certainly a plausible option, then I think something that could result is we become a bit more them and us, and I think it's actually a time when we need to be pulling our sector together. The important thing is that, and this is I think the concern, and it needs to be noted from those that don't feel there's a role for the industry directors there, that they feel that the board has been captured, and that so basically Beef and Lamb New Zealand are making suboptimal decisions in the interest of farmers, more to favour the processes. So look, I think there's always an element of risk around that, but as I said earlier, the industry directors that we have on the board, they're very much working in the best interest of farmers, and I think they bring some valuable context from the processing export sector, which if we were in our own little huddle as a group of farmers, we wouldn't have necessarily that full context. But they also act as translators too. And it's interesting, you know, when you talk to some of the industry directors, that when they first come on our board, they actually, their eyes are opened to farmer issues. And so they go back and talk to their processing colleagues and explain actually some of the realities of what's going on farm. And I think that's helped significantly in terms of a lot of the things that we're tackling. We shouldn't have a them and us. That's the view of the board.
Yep.
Now, at the end of the day, it's a farmer organisation. Mm-hmm. And so whilst we're saying that's our preference as a board, if farmers say, look, yeah, hearing what you're saying, but that's not what we want, and sufficient numbers, then absolutely we will look at, I'm quite adamant we would change the constitution. And so my suggestion would be probably 6 + 3 independents would be the next best. The irony in that is we would probably be looking for someone from the processing and exporting sector to be at least one of those. They may not be an active participant in the processing sector, but they would have to have some good expertise and may be recently departed, and just because that's such a crucial part of what we do. So you look at we're really open for views on this one. Just importantly, around the mechanics, if there was to be a change to the Beef and Lamb New Zealand Constitution, if it's a non-technical thing, like just sort of outdated references, and a more material in nature like governance, we would need a 75% majority. And so our intention is that we would, if there's sufficient support for a change, then we would look to put that up as something to be ratified as at the Beef and Lamb New Zealand AGM, which is in March next year.
Okay, now that was going to be my next question about the actual mechanics, but just back, you talked about the view of the farmer elected directors, the board of Beef and Lamb New Zealand. Have you heard, or is it appropriate to mention, you know, what is MIA's view of the, do they see value in it and would like to check?
Yeah, I probably haven't heard an official Meat Industry Association position, but informally I think that we've been keeping them up to speed with the process we're running, and I think, you know, probably whilst not an official view, I think that the comments I've heard from the process sector is they think it would be a shame if we were to sort of go our separate ways. It's interesting, you know, like going back in history, the relationship between the farm organisation or meat board and the Meat Industry Association was much more antagonistic than it is now. And so, you know, I think we actually work much more closely together. And it sends quite a strong signal to government too, and others, other organisations, that actually the meat industry are reasonably coordinated. So, you know, if we, I think there is some danger in terms of us sort of going our separate ways.
And there's a wrinkle there, which you sort of touched on briefly. I just want to clarify that the meat board actually still exists.
That's right.
Even though Meat New Zealand went, technically it's more or less exactly the same people, but a constitutional change for Beef and Lamb New Zealand would have some major implications for the meat board. So that's, do you want to talk, A, the meat board role, and there's obviously more a specific role there for meat industry representatives in that one, and what that might mean if Beef and Lamb New Zealand decided to change its structure.
So really important point. So the meat board still does exist, as you said, Aaron, much more slimmed down from the meat board of old. And it's got two core functions, really. One around administering the quota into our quota markets, for US for beef and EU for sheep meat, and also a small quota of high quality beef into the EU. The other area that looks after is administering farmer reserves. So we've got $80 million sitting there in terms of farmer reserves. And so the meat board is a statutory board established under the Meat Board Act 2004. And in the Act, it's quite explicit that the eight directors, which includes the two meat industry nominated directors from Beef and Lamb New Zealand, also should sit on the New Zealand Meat Board. And then to top that up, to ensure government interests are maintained, the Minister for Primary Industries appoints two government-appointed directors onto the board. So we have a board of 10, so two government-appointed directors and then eight from Beef and Lamb New Zealand, which also includes the two meat industry-nominated directors. And the Act is really explicit. It says that we need to bring over the two meat industry-nominated directors onto the New Zealand Meat Board. So if we were to change the Beef and Lamb New Zealand Constitution, what that does have some knock-on effects for the New Zealand Meat Board, which makes it quite complicated. I suspect those that put the Constitution together back in 2003 and then the Meat Board Act in 2004 were probably thinking actually these two are reasonably intertwined. And it makes good sense on the face of it in terms of trying to share governance costs, you know, spread them, reduce them. But it does create some issues if we were to change the Beef and Lamb New Zealand Constitution, particularly around the meat industry nominated directors, that we could be in violation of the Act on New Zealand Meat Board. So so probably trying to think that one through in terms of the way that could play out. Look, it's not insurmountable, but that we would need to probably have a consequential amendment to the Meat Board Act, which to get that through government and to actually, when you open up an act for review, suddenly there's a whole lot of other things that come into it. And so we think the Meat Board Act actually works quite well, but it does create a little bit of risk. You know, another possibility could be that the minister, whoever that may be at the time, may actually appoint two people there. Rather than change the Meat Board Act, they would say, well, we'll just appoint two meat industry people. And that may or may not be in farmers' best interests.
Because there is, I mean, even clearer, more direct benefit to having meat industry representatives on the meat board, and particularly with those roles.
That's right. You know, there's quite a lot of technical stuff around administering the quota, etc. And so having them there is important. And, you know, I think the other important thing is the $80 million of farmer reserves that sits within the New Zealand Meat Board. Back in 2003, it could have gone both ways. It could have gone into Beef and Lamb New Zealand because it all sat in the New Zealand Meat Board, or it could stay in the New Zealand Meat Board. And the view at the time was it should stay in the New Zealand Meat Board, but at the end of the day, it's still farmers' money. And so the Meat Board Act is quite clear that only Beef and Lamb New Zealand can apply to the New Zealand Meat Board for use of those reserves. Now, if you have less farmer control over those reserves because you've got another two directors that might be appointed to the New Zealand Meat Board without Beef and Lamb New Zealand having any say over it. You know, whilst the Meat Board couldn't be captured, at the same time, it does kind of reduce some of that farmer control over those farmer reserves. So, look, it's just another factor that we need to bear in mind. And so just trying to lay out probably some of the potential scenarios.
Brilliant. All right, just keeping an eye on time and want to wrap this up, or start wrapping this up. Anything else on either the market development or the constitution review that we haven't covered that you want to make a point about, James?
I think that's covered things reasonably well, Aaron. I guess the opportunity is for farmers to go online, and we've got, actually, I'm not sure if you've got a website there, Aaron, that we can say at the end of this podcast, but go online. We've got a series of videos there where farmers can have a look at what we're proposing, gain some more understanding. We've got the mail outs that have gone out to farmers, and that's an opportunity for them just to drill through it. We've gone a little bit lighter on the farmer consultation meetings. We just think actually they're getting a little bit outdated. Mm-hmm. The old days we'd sort of pick out a hall of farmers that were keen to hear about all these sort of big issues. I think a lot of them are looking at more digital means of getting information. So that's why we're going a little bit lighter on the consultation meetings, but really trying to upweight some of these other mechanisms like podcasts, videos, etc. And we've got some survey forms online, yep, as well as the ability just to mail stuff back to us in terms, right, of farmers' views. And we really do want farmers' views on this. It's really important that we're in tune with farmers' thinking.
Yeah, well, we'll see how the podcast goes and see whether it's another, yeah, alternative. So beeflamnz.com is our website, and it'll be, it's /consultation, but it'll be there on the website anyway. The link will be quite clear to look at some of the videos, download the documents. Hopefully they've all arrived in your mailbox if you're a registered levy payer with Beef and Lamb New Zealand. If not, you can just give the 0800 number a call, 0800 233 52. We'll put those details in the description of the podcast. But we've covered off everything today. The key thing now is for farmers to have their say, either electronically, online, directly to the director at one of the meetings, or I suspect your phone rings occasionally, James, with people,
right,
ringing up to tell you whether they think this is a good thing or not. But so look, we are going to wrap it up there, and so many thanks for your time today, James.
Thank you.
And to those of you who have listened or are listening to this podcast, thank you as well. It's something Beef and Lamb New Zealand have just added to our toolbox, if you like, of extension methods and ads. It's another way of getting information that may be a bit more practical or timely. So it would be really great to get your feedback on all the things we've discussed today, and we'd be interested in any feedback on this format as well. So in the meantime, though, thank you all again, and goodbye.
Cheers, Aaron.